Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're Grant and Danny, and you are listening to The Fan. We've played 4.5. We are halfway home. That means just two chances remain in our program for you to win $1,000. 12K a day cash flash multi-market contest. Top of the hour sports flashes. Message and data rates apply. 102, your next opportunity. Alan May joins us in studio in 25 minutes before the end of the hour. The general manager of the Washington Capitals, the architect of your Eastern Conference champion. Capitals. Sounds good, doesn't it? Next in line to accomplish playoff greatness, the Washington Nationals. Let's kick off our Beltway Blitz on the diamond. Jorge Castillo covers the Nats for the Washington Post. Jorge, let's start with tonight's series in Miami. Max Scherzer's on the mound. I'm looking at these next six games against the Marlins, the Orioles, as an opportunity to beat up on bad teams. Do you think that's the way the Nats are viewing it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, between, like you said, those six games and the previous three against San Diego, I mean, they obviously would have liked to take that game Wednesday in Washington. But, you know, this is a big stretch for them because, you know, right after this, it's Atlanta in Atlanta. And, you know, the Braves are playing really well with those young guys atop the order with that offense. So this is a chance for them with Max going tonight and Strasburg Sunday, Aurora tomorrow. I mean, it's a chance for them to sweep a team that's just not as good as them, obviously.
10-run explosion the other day, Jorge, but it kind of masks. This offense is scuffling a little bit. A lot of ones and twos in terms of a run score. Yeah. 3 runs or less in 8 of their last 11 ball games. How do they find some and generate enough offense? No, you're not going to, you know, slug 8-9 runs a game without some of the pieces that they've got, but how can they find a way to get to that 4 or 5 plateau?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the injury is obviously a big deal between Eaton and Merck being out, even Goodwin. But, you know, guys like, you know, that night when they scored those 10 runs, you know, Bryce had a great night. And he hasn't really been hitting lately. You know, he obviously walked a lot, moved into the top of the order. He did really well there. But he's been sort of slumping since with, you know, besides like a couple games here and there, including that 10-run explosion. And then Juan Soto obviously had the big night. And he's a 19-year-old rookie. You can't depend on him too much. So then you guys like Rendon to step up. They need the platoon with Adams and Reynolds to do really well. Because, you know, without Ian and Murphy, you need those guys to step up. You know, Michael A. Taylor had the big game the other day, but he's struggling offensively. They just need all these guys to step it up a little bit.
You mentioned Soto, who's 3 for his first 10 with the 3-run homer heard round D.C. What are the expectations for the 19-year-old? Is he going to play more often than he isn't and have a chance to stay in the big leagues?
I think he's going to play a lot more than probably most people believe. First of all, he's a left fielder. I think they want to have him in there as much as possible. Defensively, he's probably better than, you know, the Matt Adams type. And obviously with Howie Kendrick not in there now, they want as much, you know, offense as they can in the lineup. So I think he's going to play a lot more than we think. The fact that he started against two lefties this week, even though his splits this year against lefties in the minors were tremendous. Dave Martinez said he probably was going to play one of those two games. He ended up playing both. He's going to play against righties. So I think occasionally he might not play against the lefty, but I think he's going to get a lot of playing time.
Jorge, the depth of the bullpen, I think, is the most glaring thing that needs addressing, not just because of effectiveness, but because of potential overuse for guys like Mattson. We already see the effect there, and Doolittle and Kinsler, and Sammy Solis has been an everyday Eddie at this point.
Yep.
Do they have something in the pipeline and the horizon that might help them? They're hoping Tim Collins, obviously, does it here. It's a good story in of itself, but there's no magical Matt Albers bullet walking through that door, is there?
There might be. I mean, there's this guy coming in tonight. He's going to get promoted. It's not official yet, but Justin Miller is going to join the team today here in Miami. And he has 23 strikeouts, and I believe it's like 13 innings with Syracuse, 3 walks, one of them intentional. He doesn't want to run. He's been pretty dominant down there. And apparently he's a guy that, you know, he's had some experience in the majors with a couple different teams, and I think it's like 82 appearances. But he's really changed this year's velocity. He's jumping down in Syracuse. I think he's something like 95. Slider 89. So apparently he could be an Albers type. You mentioned Tim Collins. He's a guy that can provide some lefty depth, you know, because it was basically Sammy Solis for a while by himself. So if they can get Collins in there, sort of helps him out a little bit. And then Wander Suero is another guy who Dave Martinez is kind of, you know, trusting a bit more. He allowed a home run the other day to plead, but that was on a mistake curveball and an 0-2 count, a pitch that he probably shouldn't have thrown. So besides that, he's been great. So three guys from Syracuse that might help this team out quite a bit in the bullpen.
Yeah, they need that help. Miller, by the way, in the AAA International League this year, to your point, 9 scoreless appearances, 23 Ks in 13 innings. His average against is 0.70. Jorge, thanks so much for the information. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jorge.
Hey, no problem, guys. Appreciate it.
Let's talk a little puck, shall we? Don't know if you've heard, but the Caps are representing the East in the Stanley Cup against the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Chris Russell is our insider, and he's been at Kettler Ice Complex. What's up, Chris? What's the latest on the Caps as they get ready for Las Vegas?
All right, guys. The players are mostly in the building, some film, workout. No practice today. They'll practice tomorrow morning here at 10:30. Of course, open to the public, and that'll be the only open practice before game one here at Kettler Iceplex. But we just, as a matter of fact, Brian McClellan, team general manager, is still speaking as I walked out to talk to you guys. Barry Trotz spoke for about 25 minutes. So that's the extent of the media availability. Some interesting things, of course. Mac, of course, took over for George McPhee when McPhee was let go by Ted Leonsis and the Capitals after 17 years. You know, of course, both of those guys know each other very closely. They worked together for such a long time, lots of connections here. He admitted that there was a little, I guess, time and communication that went by after George's firing where they didn't really talk much, and you know, certainly a lot of mutual respect on both sides and how much George's fingerprints are on this Capitals championship run. And I think for Barry Trotz, you know, McClellan said, I asked about player extensions, all the expiring contracts. Others were asked about Barry Trotz's contract. Brian McClellan was not going to give us much on that. He said, look, everything will be addressed at the end of the season. I don't know if that's just playing poker, but we're not getting any resolution to that very, very big looming question on all the pending player free agents and specifically Barry Trotz.
That's Chris Russell. He's presented by Dominion Jewelers, custom engagement rings and jewelry in the heart of Falls Church. They make it beautiful. You make it yours. DominionJewelers.com. All right, Russell, the matchup is set, much like your necktie is set in its tied up form. Break this thing down for us. Where do the Caps have the advantage? Where do they have a disadvantage heading in?
Yeah, I think their advantage is skill, number one, and I do think their power play could be an advantage, but the Vegas Golden Knights, I think, have a really fast team, and they will make you pay if you turn the puck over in the neutral zone, or certainly if you turn the puck over in your own defensive zone, Danny. Of course, Marc-Andre Fleury has been a you want to call him a guy that has controlled and has been demonic, if you will, against the Capitals in the past. Sure, absolutely. If he's on the top of his game, going to be very difficult to beat. One thing I noticed in watching some of the Golden Knights series against the Winnipeg Jets, I went back and watched a bunch of the end of that series, is they are really good on offense. They're really good behind the net. They're really good passing the puck from behind the net when they have it behind the opponent's net. And they're really good using the backhand as well. I know it sounds kind of weird, but they like to go to their backhand a lot. So that's something that Braden Holtby and the Capitals defensemen are going to have to watch out for. Again, really good passing the puck from behind the net, really good at wraparounds, and really good on the backhand. Now, one thing to kind of remember from Game 7 the other night, Holtby had 3 or 4 backhand saves, and again, from behind-the-net type situations against Tampa. So that matchup maybe, you know, kind of gets neutralized a little bit. Just something to look out for as this series gets going on Monday night.
Chris Russell will be joining us throughout the playoffs as our Caps insider. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Speaking of insiders, nobody knows more about this team than Alan May. Used to play for the Caps. He's plugged in like a microwave, texting and keeping up with all the top officials, coaches, and players on the team as the pre- and post-host at NBC Sports Washington. He's going to be in studio with us for the final hour and a half of our show today, which is
nice.
Awesome. Give you guys some great insight from 12:30 to 2. Let's do this next. Why this collection of Capitals? Danny, I can rank all the Ovechkin years if you want me to next segment. This group, in terms of sheer talent, would be closer to the bottom than the top of that list. But they're the ones that made the cup. Why? How come this 2017-28 iteration pulled it off? That is the question for you. Want to know what you guys think at 800-636-1067 on why this group got further than any of the other Capitals teams in years past that may have been better. We'll tackle that on Grant and Danny. Alan May is hanging out with us in studio for the duration of the broadcast. We'll welcome him in just a moment. As we welcome you back on Grant and Danny, we are getting you set for the Stanley Cup Final. Washington Capitals hockey is going to be showcased in front of the country and across the world. As everyone tunes in for the Cup, Alex Ovechkin finally going to get his just due.
Yeah.
Barry Trotz finally going to get this showcase he's been waiting for. A lot of people in this organization have worked for years for this opportunity, and they're finally getting it.
They're not just a piece in the, you know, the NBC Sports montage of different things Sidney Crosby's done. This is not just a Vegas story. And the Vegas story is incredible. Obviously, not necessarily the expansion team part, but what they've overcome, how that market has embraced that team, et cetera. That'll probably get 60% of the coverage, but here's the other 40, these Washington Capitals. And the greatness of Ovechkin will be on display. Nicholas Backstrom, who's been criminally underappreciated for the entirety of his career, will be on display. Brayden Holtby, a couple-time Vezina finals, one-time winner, he'll be on display. Barry Trotz, one of the good guys in all of sports, one of the good guys, period, will be on display. It's awesome. Can't ask for more.
Great story, and it's been a wonderful couple of days of celebrating here in town, and really the celebration is just getting going. As we welcome you in on Grant and Danny, we want to turn things over to our buddy Alan May, who's with us in studio, of course, a longtime Capitals great, who is an analyst for NBC Sports Washington's pre- and post-game coverage. Alan, thanks for joining us in studio, man. How you been?
I'm great. Thanks for finally having me, guys. It's a lot better to be here than on my smartphone all the time.
It's a little bit better, right? Appreciate you making the trek in. So here's what we want to do. We're going to take calls on this. We want to open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines for people at 800-636-1067. But we'll ask Alan to get this started, and we'll take your calls in a moment, 800-636-1067. I posed this question. Me and Danny have thoughts, but let's let you get us going. Why do you think this group of Capitals, which I think we'd all agree is not the most talented of all the clubs that have been here during the Ovechkin era, is the one that'll play for the Stanley Cup?
Because they all came together with the coaching staff and finally started to do things different. We look at all the coaches that were here over the years, and they wanted to do run and gun. We had one guy that wanted to do defense only. They played Dale Hunter hockey, was just about getting down and crowding around to Brayden Holtby, shot blocking, but there was no offensive plan. There was no offensive structure. And then Barry Trotz, even the first few years here, tried to ground and pound with everyone. I thought the team played too fast, too heavy, overzealous on the attack, on the forecheck. And then you look at what they were doing, trying to race the Pittsburgh Penguins, trying to play speed versus speed against a very fast team with a lot of snipers. But this team's figured it out. It's a combination of a great forecheck, and when they do not have 100% certainty of getting to the puck on a hit or winning a race for a puck, if it's 99%, they back off, they take the neutral zone, they go into that 1-1-2 defense or 1-1-3 defense, hold the blue line, force teams to dump the puck in, and that's exactly how you have to play in the playoffs. There's got to be a good blend, and because this team isn't overly offensive, they've got some superstars, but by and large, what we saw in the past was when the players, you're looking to the role players, the third and fourth lines, you got nothing, nada, last year. This year, you're getting contributions because they're waiting for opportunities to score goals.
Why do you think it clicked, though? I mean, I get you can watch and you can see some of what you're saying play out, but in years past, the teams knew they had to do that. They knew that if they want to get where they got to go, this is the way you have to play. They still weren't able to.
It wasn't the right system, though. Now they've tweaked it. They had sometime late in the season, the players and the coaching staff had a powwow, and that's a meeting. And anyways, so they had this meeting, and everyone aired their grievances on, you know, this isn't the right system for us inside the defensive zone. They're giving up way too many high danger chances.
So the players are saying that, or the coaching
It was
staff?
A combination. They had to figure something out. They started to do things different. Now we see defensemen at the front of the net all the time. We saw a lot of times during the coverage in this man-on-man defense inside the defensive zone that we had defensemen all the way up at the blue line. No one's protecting the house. And eventually, I think that's where Braden Holtby lost his confidence, got out of his structure and technique of his game. But they started to figure out what defense worked for this team. And then there was an epiphany of defense is all 200 by 80 foot, 5 foot of the ice. Puck management, when you can't make a play, where do you throw the puck? You're skating in the zone. You can't get by the guy at the blue line. You throw it below the goal line and you take ice. So it all just came together at the right time. I think the light bulb went off with the coaches and the players, even the older guys. They figured it out, and I really look at the game 5 against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jacob Vrana, a lot of people thought he had his best game. He had 3 points, a goal and 2 assists. But his best game to me was game 6 when he had about 5 poke checks. He had about 5 block passes, all of those little things, and he figured it out. I got to protect the puck, and I've got to do these other things. That makes me valuable. And all of a sudden, every player on the team was in sync.
Alan, piggybacking on what you just said, buy or sell this. It may come out a little convoluted, so bear with me. One of the things I think has been a disease across DC sports is the kind of big promise assumption that because we're so good, it'll just work out. You saw it with the Wizards this year. Just guys talking about the best team in the Eastern Conference ducking us. Nobody ducked you. You're not that good yet. You haven't arrived. The Nationals, you know, the where's my ring comment from Bryce Harper a few years ago, believing that everybody, we're just so good, it's just going to work out. And the approaching yourself like you're a star, even though you're not putting up star production. The Capitals, I think, had some of that as well. I don't know how to quantify that, but we're so good. We're the President's Trophy winning team. It's just going to work out, instead of that level of buy-in that you're talking about. I think that has been eradicated with this group.
Well, we'll go back to last year, and even the last 2 years, I thought there was a little bit of arrogance, and if they don't like that, I have to say that. That's my perspective, as being a guy that's been in pro hockey for over 30 years and playing the game and coaching and being at every different level of this game. And I felt there was a little bit of arrogance in blowing games in March and April and going to the playoffs and think you could just turn it on, because every day to me is go day. It's like you get in a boxing ring. There's no keeping your hands down. You've got to go in a boxing match, and you got to be ready to fight no matter who it is. That's how you get your ass kicked when you're in a match. So you've got to treat everyone with respect. You try to win every fight, every game. There was a little bit of, you know, I just think complacency on those teams. And then there was the noise, and with now Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and you know, being able to have, you know, your iHeartRadio, you know, all your different things, you can listen to anything anywhere. And there was a lot of noise about the curse of the President's Trophy. Well, when teams used to be in first place before they actually awarded a President's Trophy, they used to win because they didn't have the noise. They didn't have the pressure that it was a bad thing. Braden Holtby didn't have to hear the noise of, oh, maybe Philip Grubauer should be the starter. So they got rid of all the noise going into these playoffs because no one respected them it was the Tampa Bay Lightning in the finals in a lot of people's minds. And they were probably going to play Nashville or Las Vegas. And, you know, the Dreamers thought Las Vegas, Nashville was your safe money. And people just looked at it that way. And the Caps have been underdogs in every series so far. And I don't know how it's going to shake out by Monday night. But I still know 2 weeks ago people were picking Vegas if they got there to beat the Caps.
Yeah.
So they don't have the noise. They don't have to worry about that now. Braden Holtby, because he came in the second game of the Columbus series, didn't have to hear the noise of the backup being better than him because he is
It wasn't
better.
True.
That's not a shot at Grubauer, but your backup's always better than your starter until he's the starter. And I've seen that so many times over the years, and that's not a shot at Philip, but they don't have the pressure. And Braden Holtby, I think he was just so fatigued from the amount of pressure that he was under this year that he needed that break. And that's one of the best things that's happened to this team is his struggles in February and March, because I put that on a lot of the team and how they were playing in front of him. And if finally he broke down and started letting shots in from the high danger area, whereas in October, November, December, and January, you know, he was winning that battle most nights.
If you guys have a Caps question for Alan May, you can hit us up at 800-636-1067. He's in studio with us for the remainder of the show. For the final hour and a half, we're with you today ahead of CDVTW. So give us a shout if you want to talk to Alan. The question we want you to answer for us, though, next, why this group? Why do you think they got to the Stanley Cup when so many others before them couldn't? You're listening to The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I saw it all. I saw it first shift. I think Ovi's been on a mission. Kuzi, they stepped up big time. Right off the bat, you saw the commitment on guys blocking shots and taking hits. They stayed disciplined. They had some pucks behind us, but I kept saying, you know, the hockey gods always even out things for you, and just stay with it because they will. And once we got into the third period, they had got through the first 5 minutes. I knew we were in great shape.
Barry Trotz is the head coach of the Cup-bound Capitals. We're Grant and Danny, your flagship home for the Caps, 106.7 The Fan. You will hear every minute of the Stanley Cup right here on 106.7 with John Walton on the call. Alan May of NBC Sports Washington, former great Cap, in studio with us. And before there was Tom Wilson bringing people to their feet, throwing punches, there was Alan May. You had to love the fisticuffs straight out of the box with Coburn. That was old school.
Were you shadowboxing in the studio, miming the
I was actually in the arena worried. I didn't want him fighting him there because I was so worried. He was so angry. He was so upset, and he was throwing bombs, and he was throwing these weird angle punches, and I was just worried. The way I used to break my thumbs and my fingers and my hands was hitting a guy in the back of the head, and the punches were so wild, and he was still hitting the helmet, that I thought he was going to break something and be rendered ineffective with his hands the rest of the playoffs to get to the finals and then not be able to pass a puck or dig it out. So on that side of it, you know, there's part of me like, don't do that, don't do that, the guy that's apprehensive about injuries. And the other side of me is like, kick his ass. Like, just get after it and keep it going. I want to see a left-hand knockout right here.
But yeah, you're right, though, because that was not your normal – it was certainly choreographed, but generally there is this –
it wasn't choreographed. You know what? The difference between the old choreographed fights that ruined it for everybody was two guys talking in warm-up and saying, hey, if a coach gives me a shift in the second period because I'm too useless to play the game, you think your coach could let you out in the second period and I could have a fight, rather than a guy like Wilson that's out there every third and fourth shift.
Right.
So that was spontaneous combustion still. They were still upset about what happened before. I was worried even more about the two-minute penalty that he got in the box when he was with the linesman. I was like, no way, they're gonna screw you, kid. Stop. He was trying to get after Coburn when Coburn had
the jersey. Right.
The jersey.
And I was worried that the ref was going to say, because he was overzealous and trying to get after him, once the ref had his hands on him, that he was going to get a 2 and a 10. And we need this guy on the ice. He's far too valuable now.
Yeah.
I couldn't say that 2 years ago, but the growth in his game, the maturity, the level of thought that he's put in this game to be a really good player is so much better. So in the old days, I would have like, that's okay, because he's not going to be a factor. This guy's a huge factor right now.
Look at that first goal, and there was a plethora just like it in both this series, the last series when he wasn't suspended, where he got rushes started, and that
he makes
top line.
The other guy's uncomfortable, and I love that. Yeah, I love that.
It's called hearing footsteps. They're terrified. And after game six, they had to be terrified and having nightmares about Wilson, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Ovechkin, and Orpik laying down the smack, because they were coming hard. They were going after him so hard. And Wilson, with the hits that he's throwing all through the playoffs, whether someone thinks it's illegal or not, it doesn't matter. He goes 100 miles an hour, skates in straight lines. He's 225 pounds, a solid muscle. He's explosive, and he just rattles guys. And it hurts. It wears you down. But like you said, getting back to that goal, he was a power forward on the boards, and that's what you need on every line. If you could have your dream line, you got a power forward, you got a playmaker in the middle, and then you got a gunner on the other side. And it touched all three sticks. It went from the power forward to the playmaker to the big gun. And, wow, 62 seconds in, it's lights out.
I couldn't believe it. Dan's in Fairfax. Alan May's in studio with us. Dan, Grant, and Danny, thanks for calling, pal.
Hey, great to talk to you all again. Thank you.
Hey, bud.
You bet.
I think number one is the young players have stepped up. DSB, Kuznetsov, Burakovsky, Conley, and Verana. And number two, playing better as a team. They're a tight-knit group. I love Tom Wilson, by the way. I know the Golden Knights are a hell of a team, but we're a team of destiny. And the last one is Holtby. He's been playing awesome lately. And, you know, they say this cat Holtby is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. I'm only talking about Holtby.
Attaboy, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate you. So we talked Hopi for a second, and we'll come back to Hopi a little bit later.
I wasn't ready for that.
With Allen. But clearly, Brayden Hopi is benefiting from that reprieve that he got. I also think he's less fatigued. I've talked a lot with Brent Johnson about this, who we work with at NBC Sports Washington. Johnny really believes over the last couple of years that the games, the minutes have taken their toll. And getting to be spelled so much late in the year, Hopi's fresher now late into the playoffs than he's been. But I want to tackle this idea of the kids, because I thought Chandler Stephenson, by and large now, in the postseason, has been marvelous. He's played the fourth line, the third line, the second line, penalty kill. He has done everything for this group. Verana, you said it. He's starting to come into his own on both ends of the ice. Burakovsky, who I was screaming at, scored two goals to move you past and advance you. You had the big moment from Walker. Gersich got on the ice. You want to talk about kids and speed? They've all done something at some point to help the cause.
They have, and that's a testament to the general manager, Brian McClellan, is forcing this team to go with the young guys this year rather than going out and grabbing all these older players. They said, you know, we've got these draft picks, and we've got to get them in the lineup. They've got to start gaining experience. And maybe that experience in the back of his mind was for next year, to start really getting it going next year and the year after, with Ovechkin just having a few years left and Backstrom a couple years left on his contract. But all of these guys are fast. And the new profile, and if you look at Vegas, they've kind of thrown the old-school profile out of the game. You have to be fast. You've got to be lightning fast. All your defensemen have to be mobile. And the Caps added a lot of speed to their lineup. These kids are young. They're naive. I'm going to throw Andrei Burakovsky in there with the young speedster as well. All these guys fit the profile, and they're all learning how to play. And they're all. This is the greatest teaching experiment that you could ever have for these players, how important it is in playoff hockey to make the right play. Now, if you practice that all season long, when it comes to a time of crisis in the playoffs, you'll have good habits. And that's what these young kids have all learned. But they're all lightning fast. They're all playing a north-south game. You don't want them wiggling all over the ice. You want them going up and down, winning races, getting the pucks, valuing a poke check, valuing a pass stolen across the seam, a great back check. And that's what we're seeing out of all these guys. They're becoming a more complete player because of understanding now how to play team defense all over 200 feet of the ice.
I should have mentioned Christian Jews, too.
Yeah.
You remember, Danny, when
Absolutely.
They went Jews over Yarabek, I didn't like the decision.
No.
He has played very responsibly. He can move the puck, and he gives you something on the offensive end. John in Bethesda has a question for Alan May, who's in studio with us. What's up, John? How are you?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
What's up, John?
Doing well. Hey, Caps are in the cup. We can't complain.
Yeah. Hi, Alan. So for me, I see a definite difference in what I would just call effort between the Caps' wins and the Caps' losses. And in the Tampa series, it almost seemed like as soon as everybody started saying, well, now the Caps are the favorite to go to the finals, that all of a sudden they turned into the President's Trophy version of the Capitals, until they were then underdogs again, and then they started having that extra effort again. I don't know if that's what you see or not.
You, John. What do you think, Alan?
Well, I think for John, it's just too easy to think that way. And what happens is you have a team, the Tampa Bay Lightning, were the best team in the Eastern Conference, almost the best team in the National Hockey League from Game 1 to Game 81. And you look at what they were able to do. They put up 115 points on the boards. They have superstars in their lineup. They had to adapt after the first couple of games to what the Caps were doing. It was so obvious as to how the Caps were playing those games that they had to throw a monkey wrench in. They had to start doing things different. And then the Caps had to counter, and they had to go back to figuring out, first and foremost, how to kill a penalty, to stay out of the penalty box. And then they had to adapt and get their power play going again. So it's a chess match. It's on the coaches. It's on the players to find a way to be better. And that's why we all thought it would be a seven-game series.
Alan May is with us on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. If you've got a question for Alan, he will answer it for you. We want to know why you think this Caps team got to the cup when so many other, maybe more talented teams weren't able to. Alan mentioned Brian McClellan in one of his answers this segment. The general manager of the Capitals is going to be joining us soon here on Grant and Danny. You'll want to hear that interview right here on The Fan.
Minutes and 43 seconds. It's 4-0 Washington.
The fact that the Caps won Game 7 was cool, but not as cool as the fact that they were dominant. It was calm. It was casual. There was no gut-wrenching, nail-biting, stress-inducing moments. 62 seconds in, they took a lead, and they didn't need another goal after that, even though they potted three more. The architect of the Capitals is the general manager, Brian McClellan, and he joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Brian, thanks so much for the time. It's Grant and Danny. You're back on the show here on 106.7 The Fan. And Alan May is in studio with us today. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Much appreciated. So much for that two-year window, huh? Two-year window came and went. And we got people yelling at you to blow it up. No Justin Williams. No Marcus Johansson.
No Alsner.
No Kevin Shattenkirk. So much for not making the playoffs or winning the division, eh?
Man, oh, man.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get held accountable for that two-year window statement, but I think I think the intent from my point was two-year window with that group of guys. I knew at some point those contracts, how they lined up, that we're going to have to make changes and go with younger guys, and I don't think it was ever my intention that we were not going to be competitive going forward. In fact, I disagreed with maybe some of the outside evaluations, and that I thought we were going to be better this year than was predicted.
When did you have an idea that this was possible, Brian? A lot of guys will say, I knew as soon as I put the roster together we were heading this general direction, or as soon as you made the trade. But when did you have a feeling about this group that this may be the one that breaks through that wall and beats Pittsburgh and gets to a conference final and overcomes adversity once again and beats Tampa Bay and has a chance at the biggest prize? When did you have an idea about this team?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever had that idea. I think, throughout the year, we had a lot of ups and downs emotionally and, maybe a little inconsistency with our defensive play. Maybe the first sense of it is in the first round when we're down 2-0 and we managed to claw it back from Columbus. I think that was probably the first indication that we were going to be good at it. But still then you don't trust it until we keep doing it, until we find those moments that certain guys or certain plays happen in our direction and we benefit from them.
And Brian, you've had experience yourself winning a Stanley Cup back in 1989 with the Calgary Flames and had an incredible roster there. And you came in late in that season. What was the point in that playoffs where you guys really started to gain confidence? And then the second part of that is, have you seen some of that in this team as well?
Yeah, I think, I remember the Vancouver series. We were the number one seed. We had won the President's Trophy, and Vancouver barely got into the playoffs. We had them first round, and it went to 7 games. And, there was a lot of pressure. There was, it shouldn't have gone to 7 games. I mean, we kept hearing about it every day, and I think, it started to wear on the team. And then we came out, and I think Stan Schmeal had a breakaway, and Vernon made a big save. Play went down the other way, and a puck went off Poplinski's skate and into the net, and we ended up going on. And from that point on, we played better. We played with, a little more freedom, and it went smooth after that point. And I think it's kind of like that Columbus point where Lars gets that goal. And, from that point on, I think we've reacted well to everything that's come our way.
Brian McClellan, general manager of the Capitals, put together the Eastern Conference champions on the hotline with us here on Grant and Danny. Look, I could talk to you about Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, and Backstrom, but it doesn't take a genius to field that part of the roster. I want to give you credit for the back end of this roster, your Christian Jews of the world who have been great in these playoffs. The fact that Alex Chiasson and Devontae Smith-Pelly brought in this offseason have had really important contributing games in this run. Do you take more pride in that? I mean, obviously you feel good for Ovechkin, and Kuznetsov taking flight is a cool thing. But the guys like Jacob Verana, who you've stood by, who you could have moved and didn't, does that make you fist pump a little bit more in your GM suite?
Yeah. I guess. No, I mean, it's this group, this team of guys have all found ways to contribute. I think it's probably one of the best teams that play as a team. The structure defensively, the way we play in the neutral zone, there's less guys playing outside the system than we've ever had, and it's a team group. It's fun to see these guys. I mean, you could put Chiasson in, Smith-Pelly's played well, Stevenson's played really well for me, and Barry's been able to use him all over the lineup. Tom Wilson has been outstanding. I think we've had a lot of guys step up and contribute when they can.
Brian, who's the guy kind of along those lines that's impressed you the most this postseason? I mean, obviously the record-setting point totals here of Kuznetsov and Ovechkin has been incredible, Braden Holtby with a couple shutouts here, but a guy that maybe you said, I hope this works out, and then the reaction has been, wow, that was awesome. Who's a guy that you can kind of circle?
Yeah, I think Tom Wilson's been a major contributor to what we have going on. You know, the physical play, he wins battles. He doesn't let us sit back. He's pressuring pucks. You know, he creates room for Kuzi. He makes Kuzi feel comfortable physically. I think he's brought a lot of good energy. You know, a lot of the right attitude that you need in the playoffs, a little harder style, a little straight north style. I think he's really set the tone for our team in that capacity.
And Brian, I've got one for you, too. Now, you look in the past, you've had players not being able to contribute offensively in the playoffs, and now you've had 13 of your 16 forwards score a goal in these playoffs. You've had contributions from every one of your defensemen, basically. How gratifying is that to see this team come together and have the other guys step up and score goals along with your superstars?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And I think, you know, part of it is it takes pressure off the big guys. You know, Ovi doesn't feel like, I mean, you look at game six, Ovi had an outstanding game, but he didn't have to score for us to win. When you're getting contributions from everybody, I think it frees up your skill players to just play and not put pressure on themselves to score goals. And I also think it becomes a more difficult matchup for the opposing team. You know, I think Tampa, when our bottom six is scoring or when guys that don't normally score, I think it changes the dynamic of the whole game and how they match players.
Brian McClellan is with us. He's got a Stanley Cup to watch from the suite level of Vegas's T-Mobile Arena and here at Capital One Arena. Before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, Barry Trotz's future, no contract beyond this year. I guess this is suddenly a pretty good problem to have with you guys headed to the Cup. How's this going to resolve itself?
Yeah, I think we'll work it out at the end of the year. I mean, we've always, you know, we weren't sure how this year was going to turn out. And from the beginning, we've said, you know, we'll address all the business parts, the free agents and the coaching situation at the end of the year. You know, I think we determined that we needed a full year to decide which way we want to go in the organization. I mean, Barry's had a good year, and I congratulate him for it.
So would you say the same then about John Carlson, or do you feel like with players you've been evaluating game by game for years, you kind of know what you want to do one way or the other? It just depends on if the money's right for you guys.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, John's had a great year. But again, we'll address it when we get through the finals here. You know, we'll sit down with John and his representatives and then go from there.
Brian, I can only assume you've sent some inflammatory texts in the general direction of George McPhee. I assume the S-talking has begun. Has it happened yet?
Yeah, just a little bit. As long as he's far away, you know. If I get too close to him, I'm not going to do it.
Now, you're a bigger guy. I don't know. What do you think, Alan? You know a thing or two about fights.
Well, you know, back when I was playing, I actually played against Brian. We're about the same age, and I was with the Edmonton Oilers at the time, and we went into Minnesota, and it was a New Year's Eve game, and there was a tough guy on their team named Basil McRae, who was a guy that got in a lot of fights, a very physical customer, an excellent longtime NHL player. And then Big Mac was over there, and he's a lot bigger than Basil. And going into the game, players come over to me. Kevin Lowe is one of the guys, and he comes over. He's the captain of the Oilers at the time, and he goes, hey, Alan, he goes, we want you to cut out everything tonight. None of your S-talking after the whistles, none of your stick swinging.
Don't do any of it.
And stay away from this guy over there, McClellan, because if you do that to him, you're going to wake him up. He's going to be upset. He's going to be so pissed off. He's going to beat you up, then he's going to beat up the rest of us. I went out and actually got a slashing penalty on him. I get thrown in the penalty, but I didn't realize that's him. I thought it was Basil McRae, and I wanted to fight Basil McRae and, you know, get involved in the game. And after the period, they're going, you stupid SOB. That was it. I thought it was him. The number looked the same. They're both big black-haired guys with mullets. And I thought that was the guy. I hardly got a shift the rest of the game because the coach didn't want anyone to get killed because it was New Year's Eve.
There you go. Thanks for taking it easy on Alan back then, Brian.
Yeah. I watch Alan's fights, and thank God he didn't come after me.
Awesome.
We appreciate it. Well, we are pulling for you guys. Go get yourself a championship. It's well-deserved.
Congrats and good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the support.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian McClellan, GM of the Capitals, here on Grant and Danny. Alan Mays in studio. If you're on hold, we'll get to you next. 800-636-1067. You got a question for Alan. We've got him here to answer your inquiries. Also want to get into this next. Let's talk, looking ahead for the Capitals, about the chance they should get to beat Vegas. Vegas was better all regular season long. How much of a shot do the Capitals have? We'll delve into that next.
How do you become America's best-selling brand? You introduce the all-new Ford EcoSport and surprise people with how much they can get in a small SUV. With standard features like rear swing gate, auto start and stop, rear view camera, two USB ports, two 12-volt power ports, a roomy interior with 60-40 fold flat rear seats. That's the all-new Ford EcoSport. It's a big upgrade in a small package. And it's from Ford, America's best-selling brand. The Ford EcoSport is fun, capable, and nicely equipped and starts at just under $20,000. Visit your local Ford dealer today or shop online at buyfordnow.com. Best-selling based on current year 2017 sales. MSRP $19,995. Destination delivery fee excluded. Government fees and taxes. Any finance charges, any dealer processing charge, any electronic filing charges, any emissions tax charge. The new Ford Echo.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.